This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
And I'm DJ Quick.
What up, DJ Quick?
Chilling, man.
Oh, my God.
Get to hang out with my OGs in here, my contemporaries.
Yes, sir. In case you youngins don't know what contemporaries mean, go look it up.
Get learned. Y'all got all the information in front of y'all now.
No
doubt. Try to click up a button.
So hold on. Let's go. Let's take it a step back. We're talking to a legend right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've been in this longer than I have, actually. When did you start making records?
Officially, it was 1991.
But were you working with some people before?
Yeah, I was working with a lot of people. Characters. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Characters, bro. Like, you know.
Give us some names.
Suge Knight, before he was Death Row.
Mm-hmm.
Signed to him in 1989, mm-hmm. him and the DLC. I used to work with this guy named John Boylan, who produced the group Boston and wrote More Than a Feeling.
What?
I was one of his understudies. Yeah, that's my teacher right there, dude.
Wow.
Showed me how to record.
That's amazing.
Like, multi-track at home, I was blown away.
How'd you link up with him?
There was these rappers in L.A. named Will and what are they called? The Uzi Brothers. It was a group. And the Uzi Brothers knew him. So they took me up to his house one day in Beverly Hills, introduced me to him. And
what was one of the most important lessons you learned being around him?
John?
Yeah.
It's to, most important lesson I learned was to, I don't know if it was really a lesson, but I just took a cue from him that when it comes to gold and platinum plaques, I don't think they look cool on the floor. You know, his plaques on the floor just stacked up. Like, he was either too busy or, you know, not inclined to hang them up. So I was like, if I get some, I'm going to hang them up.
I'm guilty of that.
And I ended up leaving mine on the floor, too.
I thought this was going to be a lesson about non-glare glass, but all right.
So how old were you then?
I was 18. Yeah, I got into production when I was like 15, 16, like actually four-tracking, you know, multi-recording or whatever, multi-track recording and playing synthesizers and drum machines, mixing it together. But I got serious about when I was, I got serious about it when I was 18, got some really equipment, you know, got like a Tascam 8-track or whatever, and a SP-1200 drum machine.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of it. And me and the homies in the neighborhood used to share equipment like Battle Cat.
Mm-hmm.
Battle Cat was one of my, you know, buddies coming up, and he used to bring over like MPC 60 drum machines, and before I even knew what they were, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Roland D50 synthesizers, so... You know, we got pretty musical before I came out. Even though we were sample kings, though, that's our whole thing. Sample everything, you know?
Where'd you get those records?
Back then, records were plentiful. They used to sell them in liquor stores on the corner.
Wow.
They had a liquor store, you know, clearance rack at liquor store. So you could buy, like, compilations, Motown, favorites, all this. Mm-hmm. You know, I bought Sly Stone, the song Life of Fortune and Fame, at that thing, 99 cent bin. And that's one of the best...
Funkiest. Drum breaks.
I got lucky.
Wow.
Album was all ugly, you know, but it was beautiful music on there. So.
It wasn't a secondhand record though, was it?
It was unopened. You break the seal yourself with the fingernail. Or you rub it on your Levi's.
Yeah.
Break the seal.
What was the first hip hop record you bought?
I used to buy R&B. Like, I remember buying, like, Freak Out, La Freak, Chic on Atlantic. But the first hip-hop record I bought was a used version of Rapper's Delight.
Hmm.
You know, and I think I was, like, 11. It came out when I was 9. But, you know, I couldn't afford no 12 inches back then. So I got a used one. Because they used to sell them at we had this record store called The Sound Company. And, you know, they had the used bin, so mm-hmm. I should get records out the used bin. And then the first new hip-hop record I bought was, I bought LL Cool J's album, the Radio album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, people disparage Rapper's Delight all the time, or they're like, it's corny, it was a sellout, it was whatever, but so many people we talked to, like, that was the first record they bought. That was the first one they cared about. That was it. I mean, it's responsible.
Well, I liked Good Times. That's why I made the reference to buying Chic.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I was just buying one band. It's still Chic, Nile Rodgers, Bernard Edwards. You know, that Good Times break was just one of the best bass lines ever.
Mm. Yeah.
And Rapper's Delight was a record that anybody could learn verbatim, yeah, all the way to the end. You know, any class of people, any ethnic group. I said a hip hop, a hip it, the hip it, the hip hip hop, you don't stop the rocket to the bang bang boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. Now what you hear is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the purple, and yellow, but first. So, you work with a lot of people, though. You kind of being very modest, and like the list, we're gonna be here for a minute, maybe. I don't know. I always hit the main ones whenever I start to do whenever I start to mention them.
Yeah.
But you know, there was also Talib Kweli, mm-hmm, who I never get the chance to mention. Jigga, Rakim. Mm. That was dope session. You know, Dre.
Was Rakim The Truth Hurts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a little couple of things after that. Like, I went to New York and hung out with him, you know, in the studio, tried to build something.
Why was it different working with him?
Well, this is Eric B as president, Rakim. You know what I mean? This is the guy that made, like, the most important 12-inch of my life. You know, 4th and Broadway, I only knew these labels because of these guys, you know. Yeah. And their album cover for, you know, Paid in Full was just like, what is this? This is what rap should look like. You know what I mean? So just being in the studio with him was just, I don't know, maybe it was just for me. Maybe it was personal.
Right.
But I got a chance to say that I was in the studio with Rakim. One of the greats of all time. I'm all that he's got.
Of a master plan, you know anything you need, baby, ask your man. You was there for my half a gram. Now it's kilos of Cenos and high fashion brands. We ball like we own the world. The only concern is you, my only girl. And when we speaking in tongues, breathing hard when I'm squeezing your lungs, keep it strong. But I gotta hit the streets when I'm done. It's joy and pain when you trying to get ahead of the game. It's f***ed up, but you never complain. You just pray I don't get killed when I hit the hood. Just another 100 mil and I'm equipped for good. No more drug wars, trips to jail and shootouts. Getting loot out for lawyers and bail. Look at you boot out, just me and you. High off sex, I'm twisted. You OG to you OD, addicted.
You know, worked with Ice Cube, Snoop, of course. My God, Janet Jackson, Tracy Spencer.
Tracy Spencer.
Wow. Wyclef Jean, T.I., Crucial Conflict, Bone Thugs and Harmony, Danny Boy, Tupac, Daz and Corrupt. You know,
you guys talking about Tony too?
Yeah, Tony, yeah, exactly. Tony,
yeah.
The Tonys, Rick James.
You work with Rick James?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we did we did one of his songs over for a soundtrack, How to Be a Player, the Bill Bellamy movie.
Mm-hmm.
We did Hard to Get over, one of his classics from the Throwing Down album.
What was that like?
It was wild, because he was fresh out of jail, and his voice wasn't as high as it was, so he sung it a little more girthy and big sounding, but it was still hard, and we transposed it down a little bit for him to make it a little easier, but it was funky. It was him and Richie Rich, the rapper.
Mm-hmm.
But just his stories, and him and Danny Lamel came to the studio, so, you know, that's the tandem for the best records ever, you know. Super Freak and All Night Long, mm-hmm, you know, it's them two guys. Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, it was awesome, man. And I always thought he was taller because I used to look at the street songs album. Mm-hmm. I thought he was tall because
I thought he was tall too.
Yeah, but he wasn't that tall. He's like my height, maybe.
About to say you're tall though.
Well, I'm 5'11".
You're taller than me.
Yeah, it was a trip. He's bigger than life, man. And that was one of my favorite sessions though.
Did you guys play together? Was there like a jam session or was it?
We played his record over. You know, back then it was easier to just, instead of sampling the record, just we had all the synthesizers that they used, all the Juno, Jupiter stuff, and basses and bass players, guitar players. So we just kind of just freaked it all over.
Was he playing?
No, he didn't play. We played it for him. He was shocked. He was like, y'all did it. Guitar work, you know, That back then, it was about doing the sample like you heard it.
Right.
If not, just making it a little punchier now with bigger drums or whatever. Yeah. Rick James, man.
It's so much. It's like I have pages and pages of things to talk to you about. And I'm like, I don't even know where to go. There's an order to this, but it's just, like, you mentioned R&B a moment ago, like buying R&B records. And even in your records, you really carry the flag for R&B.
Yeah.
Probably more than anyone else I know of in hip hop. I don't think anyone does.
No. I mean, because it was too soft. But, you know what I mean? It's like if you was hip hop, you didn't want to do R&B unless it was like a real on purpose R&B record. You know what I mean? But my thing was, this is the music that shaped my sound. Like, this is what we listen to, you know, soul, funk, you know, R&B, a little jazz. So, you know, I figured, like, you know, why let this musical form just disappear and die? Even though I can't save a whole musical genre, it's like I got to say something to do something, like at least to flag it a little bit, you know, bring some attention to it.
You think people can understand hip-hop or really know hip-hop if they don't know that music as well?
No, I think hip-hop is its own thing. Like, people understand it for what it means to them, and there's certain kind of different styles of hip-hop that people gravitate toward.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just one blanket sound. But there are people that just like the electric type of hip-hop. There are people that like just the new style, where it's just, you know, the mustard drum and bass stuff. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is what it is. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think kids really know about how much R&B influenced West Coast hip-hop in the 90s, 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, like I'll give you an example. The California Love record by Dr. Dre and Tupac with Roger Troutman. It's just really a sample. The remix is a sample of the group Clear, Intimate Connection. You know, and this was a big R&B record in the hood. It wasn't big on the charts. I don't even think the album went platinum, you know, the original. But on that same album, I sampled their flip side, the song called Tonight, and it ended up being a top 20 song for me, you know, on the Hot 100. So, you know, that's R&B.
City. state that's untouchable like Elliot Ness. The track hits your eardrum like a slug to your chest. Pack a vest for your Jimmy in the city of sex. We in that sunshine state where the bomb ass him be. The state where you never find a dance floor empty and pimp speed. On a mission for them greens. Lean, mean, money making machines serving fiends. I've been in the game for 10 years making rap tunes. Ever since honeys was wearing Sassoon. Now it's 95 and they clock me and watch me. Diamond shining, looking like a Rob Liberace. It's all good, from Diego to the Bay. Your city is the bomb if your city making pain. Throw up a finger if you feel the same way. Straight putting it down for California, yeah.
And you linked up with Troutman pretty early in your life, right?
Yeah, I linked up with Roger Troutman in 1992.
Okay.
And it was like he was like my big brother. It was like we just clicked, you know. And I was starstruck, don't get me wrong, because this man was so talented that he would discombobulate you. You know, you just, I end up calling him, man, you're crazy, but in a respectful way, like, mm-hmm. because I can't catch you. There's no way I'm going to be able to learn that no time soon. And I was right. It took me like a year or two to actually learn how to say words with the talk box,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I knew it. It was like, I got to go through a course. But ultimately, just no, there was no one more talented than him when it came to recording. No more talented than him on guitar or on that talk box contraption he invented. It was like he saw ahead. You know, one of the trailblazers of, you know, of funk, techno, R&B music, and jazz. Just truly probably the best R&B musician I've ever seen, a funk musician ever.
You incorporate a little bit of jazz too, especially like, it seems like there's been more jam session sort of, like instrumentals that you do.
Yeah.
Why is it important to use jazz music?
For me, because it's like exercise. Mm-hmm. It's like musical exercise. These musicians that I work with, that's what they do. They practice all day. So what better way to do anything or get better at anything than to, you know, record your practice session? So, you know, we'll write some things out or whatever, and then we'll just record it as a take and see how it feels, see how it sounds. Because it's like almost like, it's like exercise. It's like working out. And in most cases, when it's done right, it makes the album because it sounds like, you know, a piece of virtuoso work.
Mm. Is that where stuff like Quick's Groove, all those iterations come from?
Yeah, they sure did. Quick's Groove just came from records, like my first Quick's Groove on Quick is the Name. I did it because I didn't want to rap on that beat because it was so good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just by itself. It was cool. So I just had a guitar player play to it and add bass and we left it as is. It was a break that I sampled and added some drums to on my SP-1200 and just kept it like that. And then I followed suit on the second album by stretching out and doing another one. And then it just clicked. I figured that, you know, every album that'd be my own little thing where I let people jam out for, you know, jam sessions for 2-3 minutes on each album.
So how come this time it's called Bacon's Groove?
Well, there's still Quick's Groove on this album.
Oh.
And that Bacon's Groove, he actually wrote for me as Quick's Groove.
Okay.
But when it was time to do the credits, I felt like I couldn't put my name on this man's work because it's just so beautiful. It's like, I'm gonna be real about this. This is Bacon's Groove, but it's on my album. So I gave him credit for it and gave him publishing.
Why did it on Rhythmalism?
Rhythmalism.
So you say it like it just rolls razzmatazz, off your tongue.
Rhythmalism.
I guess if I'm not reading it, it just rolls off the tongue. And reading is like rhythm.
Looking at the hyphens?
Yeah, I am.
You're reading the hyphens.
But why did you, because you didn't really have a title for Quick's Groove on that album. It was like a medley?
There was medley for a V. That was with Snoop and Nate Dogg, me and High C. But the L's interlude was really what Quick's Groove was. But because L vocalized on it and wrote lyrics to it, it became, I named it for him, you know. But those are all like Quick's Grooves. And medley for the V, the vamp at the end, that was just Bacon doing some Parliament Funkadelic, you know, guitar vamp stuff, you know.
I mean, I always look forward to the quick groove because it makes me feel like you on some like Barry White, Isaac Hayes, like.
Right on. Thanks, Ollie.
Just
stretching it out.
Yeah.
Just go find, you know, what more can you do with music that's been done with the same instruments over and over? You can still do something.
Yeah.
Because everybody's got their voice, you know, music-wise.
Yeah, just, you know, I don't know if it's the musician in me or what, but it's just, like, I mean, I look forward to whatever you do because it's comical, man. Yeah.
Thank you, bro.
And not to say, like, oh, you know, DJ Quick is, like, funny, don't take him seriously. It's like, no, it's just the way you put things together. It's such a painting, and it's just like, yo, did he really say that? And it's kind of flamboyant, but not, like, on some, like, a Def Jam rapper flamboyant sort of, like, you know what I mean? It's just like, just rolls off, and it's just like a nice little smack, but it's...
But then it don't lean on it. Like, I'm not just overbearing with the, with ego.
Yeah.
I'm not really arrogant like that.
Yeah.
You know? Flamboyant every now and then, yeah. Even to a fault. Like, I had to stop doing my hair. Because that's all people's lamenting on. Like, why does he... Like, I just, you know, been working with P. Frank Miller from TV1. P. Frank asking all my friends behind my back, so why does he do his hair like that? It's like, I did my hair like this because I wanted something that looked better than the Jerry curl. And that lasts longer. As long as I got hair, I'm going to fly it out.
Yeah, that's hilarious. You know?
But, yeah. I had to leave all that, you know. This ain't the fashion show no more. I don't even think people don't care about that anymore.
No, I just want to say, you talk about your youthful appearance still to this day. You still get carded.
I mean, to an extent, like, it's, I guess,
look,
I get a little, like,
know.
I look at my, like, when I'm working, I'm humble.
Yeah.
So I look humble on these pictures.
Okay, yeah.
And because I don't, you know, I still kind of got my hair or whatever, or, you know, I don't really grow beard, you know, I look like my son a little bit. And it's kind of weird to me. But, you know, I get carded if I go and, if I comb my hair and it's not gray.
Yeah.
You know, I get ID'd. And it's like, you know, I'm like, I'm grown. Like, I'm mature age. You know, I'm old. I'm proud to say it. I made it. You know, people like me, we weren't supposed to live past 25, so this is gravy.
Mm-hmm. The fact you said 25, because it's like you've been in the music business for 25 years more.
24 years.
So that's and still making music and working with very iconic people.
Yeah, Mac 10, I just got a chance to work with Mac. Dom Kennedy, Sugar Free, Joy Gilliam, Robert Bacon, David Foreman, like, you know, on my new album, got some real cool people in there. Little kids, too, like Tay F3rd. He's a little youngster. He's about to start making some noise.
Is there anything, in looking back over 24 years of a career, is there anything that you have learned now that if you could talk to your 18-year-old self?
I had this question before.
Yeah?
Yeah, if I could tell my 18-year-old me something from now, I would tell me to watch those weirdos who are only watching my money. Be careful with my money. Mm. You know, cars are a bad investment. Don't buy 70 of them.
You don't. When you're 18, it's kind of hard to hear that when you when you got that nice little check that you just
that
like.
That big check that with the figures check on it. You got a six-figure like, check and you're a teenager. That's wild,
it's
bro.
Like, what do you mean? I don't need to. I shouldn't buy. But I have nothing else better to do with my money.
Exactly.
Other responsibilities.
Motorcycles. I wouldn't have bought so many motorcycles. And I was buying motorcycles like hot, fast Honda CRs and Yamaha Yzingers just. Hot and let people ride them, and they just catapult themselves into the air, like up to the wire, come down and just crash the bike. And I'm like, I feel guilty because this is my bike. Like, maybe I shouldn't have let them ride that one, you know? Yeah. But hey, you live and you learn.
Yeah. Can we go back a little bit? Your work with Eazy-E?
Yeah.
How did he influence you?
Easy influenced my sound. I wanted to sound like Easy because everybody liked his vocal tone. It was just crazy. Like his pitch was awesome, you know, and it was effective, for lack of a better word. Like whenever you heard him, it just sounded important, you know.
Yeah, you sounded like him. It made me wonder if you was
related. Ghost,
well, just no.
Biting.
I'm just so. No, I actually was wondering if you did some ghostwriting for him, and I know that may sound.
Oh,
you know.
I would love to have. I mean, we ended up writing together, like for the Penthouse Players Click album. But I wanted to sign with them, and Priority, Brian Turner didn't want to sign us because he thought he already had an NWA. He didn't need another one. And then we ended up selling as many records as them guys at first, you know?
What is so, how do I say this? Compton is a special place like Bronx, New York is.
Yeah.
And for the history of hip hop, a lot of people that come from Compton, like you, right? You're from Compton?
Yep.
8.
MC 8.
Arabian Prince.
Yeah.
YG. Is YG from Compton?
Yeah.
Coolio.
Yeah.
King T.
CPT, yep.
What makes Kendrick Lamar, what makes Compton, what is it about Compton that
problem.
Yeah. Problem, what do you mean?
No problem.
The rapper problem?
Oh, problem. Yeah.
He's from there too. I think there's to me, personally, there's a no holds barred, serious business kind of aspect to living in that city. You kind of have to accept that, you know, it could go down bad in an instant. Unpredictable is what it is. And if you could survive, like, it's like riding a bull. It's just like riding a bull. If you could stay on long enough, then you can ride a bull anywhere. Just like what they used to say about New York. If you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. Because New York has got their hand on the pulse of what's good or what's bad. And Compton is kind of the same way. And if you can survive and get the nods of your contemporaries around you, then you're on. Because you can make it anywhere pretty much at that point. It's just it's a real tough city it's a tough city to survive in. So, you know, we got our stripes by making it through there and being appreciated.
Is there a network that I guess you all kind of connect to make it? Because there's lots of cities all over the globe, you mm-hmm. know, and not too many have brought forth superstars and, you know, really influential artists. And I'm just wondering, what is it about Compton, you know, in addition to what you just mentioned, that there's an abundance of MCs that come from Compton.
Yeah, mate. Like they say about New York, it's in the water.
It's in the
just joking, but I don't know, man. There's a special kind of movement there. It's hard to describe. And there's a natural anxiety sometimes that I get when I go there, when I'm by myself, like no security. I still feel like I got to speed up and just be a little more cautious and, you know, watch my back a little bit more because, you know, it's you know, it could go bad, you know. But as far as the talent goes, I don't even know. Like, there's no real studios in Compton. No. There's no real concert halls, you know, outside of, you know, getting down at the high school, an auditorium or whatever, you know. There's no real place there to develop, you know, or nurture hip-hop.
So it's really a place that you're just, you know, dreaming to step outside of Compton or...
And most likely, yeah, in most cases. I mean, Compton is so micromanaged that there's a lot of people there in Compton that have been there for years, that live there, that haven't even been as far north as the Beverly Center. Wow. Like, that's out of town to them, you know, which is wild to me because it's like to be in that city, you know, you think that you'll want to venture out because there's nothing there. It's like, you know, schools there, some restaurants there. That's about it, you know. So, I mean, some people just don't want to leave. It's something special there. I always tried to put my finger on it. I never understood it. I know I always felt cool when it was time for, like, the Christmas parades. We used to have a Compton Christmas parade, and just to see the celebrities come through Compton, you know, it was
celebrities, like movie star celebrities or musicians.
Movie star celebrities, yeah. It was a trip, and even before us, before hip hop. I mean, Brenton Wood, from what I understand, came from Compton. You know, he wrote those them oldie songs. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of major baseball players that came from there. As a matter of fact, Compton, a lot of people don't know, Compton has like a baseball hub over there where they train, you know, where they train little, you know, kids to be, you know, Major League Baseball players, MLB. So that's a you know, academically, that's pretty hot.
I guess you said there's nothing really in Compton. I was just wondering, have there been improvements in the quality of life? Because
easily, the new mayor, Asia Brown, she just went through there and renovated it.
Yeah,
like she's making it beautiful. Like Compton is gorgeous now, you know, compared to what it was when we was growing up. It's a pretty city now. Like, you know, they're developing houses and, you know, beautifying the streets, repaving them. You know, fixing potholes, putting up new signs, new marquees, you know, and putting islands in the middle of the, you know, the main avenues or whatever. So, yeah, it's gorgeous.
I want to go back for a second. So, you said there's no venues or anything?
Yeah, there's no real. There used to be like Dudo's and Skateland USA.
Yeah.
Those closed down.
Right.
You know, there were clubs like Eve After Dark. I think it's kind of still there, but it doesn't get frequented as much.
Right.
So there's no real place to, like, throw a big, you know, a big shindig in Compton.
But you would DJ house parties.
Yeah.
And all over the place?
All over Compton, yeah.
All over the Compton. Mm-hmm. So I guess my theory on the whole thing is like, a tough crowd. Because in New York, the crowd is so tough. And we've talked about this.
Yeah.
He's like, if you make it in New York, it's a better feeling because it's so hard to pull off. And I'm wondering if that's a similar thing happening in Compton.
Yeah. I mean, because they spot Fugazi in a second, in a millisecond. Yeah. And when they see you fake, it's like they offer you like a, like Brussels sprouts. You know? But if they gravitate to something that you say or some, you know, like, you know, just watching you perform, if there's something that they can, you know, relate to, then they with you, do or die.
Right. And then so, but I've also often noticed people who start as DJs learn very quickly what works, and they become more effective artists later.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I would be a producer had I not knowing which records affected people in which ways. Like, I ended up, you know, just playing records forever. And the reward is when people scream when you play the right record or the dance floor fills up.
Yeah.
It's a great feeling. And ultimately, I try to make records that sound or felt like those records that I saw blow up the dance floor or whatever.
Right. And YG told us a similar thing, that he worked the same or the similar circuit.
Yeah, in old terms, it was called the chitlin circuit, where you just kind of, like, got to get your bones. You got to perform any and everywhere, you know, at the bar and grill.
Yeah.
Doing hip-hop. You know, you had to kind of do it. He did it, yeah. We did that, too, like, growing up. But ultimately, you'll get a following. You will get a following. You sell the right, you know, sell your mixtape. Back then, it was cassettes for us. So we sold cassettes, and they started to get duplicated and copied and sent all out of state. So I was having, like, you know, technically in my era, I had a network. I was already distributing my own stuff and didn't even know it.
Right.
You know, and YGNM ultimately came up the same way as mixtapes, you know, as far as CDs go. So it's the same thing. He started just doing mixtapes and playing everywhere. Ultimately, him and Mustard made that hit, Toot and Boot It, with my man on the, I always forget my man's name.
Ty.
Who sang, what's his name?
Ty.
Yeah, Ty Dolla $2. $2. Ty, you know, with Ty singing. And it just went. I mean, so, you know, he got to Def Jam. And, you know, the rest is history. Mm-hmm. Claim in my neighborhood, like my street, actually.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah.
In talking about distribution, you released...
Oh, there's also Bishop Lamont. Okay. Another talented kid from there.
You mentioned earlier that you put out your last record. It's called The Midnight Life.
Mm-hmm.
Independently, and drawing from pushing out your own cassette tapes and factoring in the internet, how do you find the whole job of distributing records now?
Distribution is a different game now, because I think that tangible hard goods distribution for music is about to end. I think this is like, it's about to end like soon. Like nobody's not gonna touch it. Starting next year, people are gonna the companies are gonna start going digital only. It's for me, it's a labor of love thing, because I still like CDs. I still like to see artwork.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still like to be interactive with my music physically. But that's not the way everybody sees it. You know, so it's a Herculean task now to put out albums. You can't depend on the internet to sell these records, because the internet is a free medium. It's public domain, in a sense. And so it's like, how do you monetize it?
Mm-hmm.
You don't monetize it. You put out, you buy the best websites that are most frequented, and you buy ads just like you used to buy commercials on these very respected websites, you know, and pages, and hope that you sell some records, you know. But it's a whole different thing. Like, the hard sale, hard goods is about to go away.
Well, as an artist who's, you know, if you're just starting out, or not even, you know, someone, you know, as a legendary artist in this new world of distributing something that's not even tangible anymore, it will not be, what would be the point? Is it, you know, to just get your art out to express it?
Well, good question.
Or is it something that, you know, you just use it as a kind of like a open card to just say, hey, I'm here if you want to see me perform?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's debated. That one question is debated. With me, personally, it is a calling card. It's a labor of love, and it's to show people that I still am musically relevant and I can do other things. It's not just this, but if you don't believe me, I can still do, you know, great in this arena. But this is really about, you know, monetizing the songs themselves, instrumentals, licensing, movies, film, because good music is still a draw. Good music is still worth something. So that's why I do it, because I'm pretty much putting out well-rehearsed, well-orchestrated music, and it goes further than just my hip-hop head. Pardon me, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
It goes further than just my hip-hop head who, you know, just want to bang the one little knock in the streets. Like, you know, just, you know, it'll go prime time with, you know, with these commercials. Like, I hear my music on in the NFL, like on some of the NFL commercials, and that's what I'm talking about. You know, that's better than just one or two radio spins. You know, and that's, I don't even think people should be in it for just the few radio spins, especially like legends. I think, like, you know, if just for me, I think my situation is good because I landed with a very decent distributor. And the costs are low. So, you know, I got a higher profit margin selling independent records at this point, you know. And you don't have to sell as many records to, you know, to be profitable, you know, especially if you got, again, if you got a respected distributor, it's like, go for it. But for the kids coming up now, they definitely have to sacrifice their music. They have to kind of give it away because it's their calling card as well. You know what I mean? They have to use it to, like Will.i.am told me, he was like, you know, music is really secondary now. Like, you know, you use music to advertise your clothing line or to do this. Like, music ain't the draw like it used to be.
Hmm.
You know, it's just the way in. And I was like, wow. Like, just listening to, you know, Will.i.am say this, it was like, it was awesome. And he was right. He saw this coming a long time ago.
Would it be different if the percentage on each song or each album went, a bigger percentage went to the artist instead of the label?
as far as the sales go,
yeah.
That's always been a debate. I mean, even now it's getting worse because of what's potentially about to happen with streaming.
Yeah.
But if they could get that right, like the percentage that goes to the artist from, like, say, a Spotify or whatever, if they get that right, then I think that, you know, there'll be more opportunities for people to be played, to be heard, and to be big stars again.
Right.
Because it takes both. It takes a balance of how hard the artist is willing to work to blow itself up and how determined the label is to get them to that level of superstardom. So it's just got to be a balance. It can't be on one side anymore.
Right. But also, you don't get, like, one or two radio spins. Like, I don't live here, and every time I'm here, it's like Quick on the radio, 24/7.
DJ Quick Radio.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it really is. It's no, not K Day. It's DJ Quick Day. It, like, it's crazy, and it just doesn't happen in New York.
Yeah,
like,
no.
At all. And so, do you see any money from that constant?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, it comes in the form of mechanical royalties. I'm with ASCAP, uh-huh. So it. I see waves of, you know, you see where you get all these spins.
Yeah.
And it's like this, and then sometimes it's like this. It's a lull, mm-hmm. But it's like a wave. It's like riding a wave.
Yeah.
But I eat from it, definitely.
Between you and Tupac out here, it's like a significant source of income that isn't happening in New York. I mean, have you ever, like, tried to parse out why, like, you're integral here and, like, not there?
I just went out there and performed at this club.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah. And my thing is, the funny thing is, with this record, I got the most sales the first week in New York.
Yeah.
For my independent record.
That's the business and the fans. And
that,
like,
was crazy.
So many people were so
that never
excited
happened.
About that.
I've never been important in New York. Mm-hmm. Like, I would have to be working with people to even be respected in New York. Maybe it was because of my hair. Maybe it was because of my country-ass voice, you know? Whatever it was, it just wasn't respected, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, how am I going platinum without New York support?
Right.
And that's the only support I wanted. Those are the only people I revered in the business was all my, you know, all the New York artists,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Well, when you make a song like Just Like Compton, I don't think, it's just like it's something that maybe people can't identify with, but especially with what you were saying, it was just like, you know, these different places, you know, across America, just like
it's
where
crazy.
I come from.
Yeah,
but,
all the gangbanging. I didn't expect to see gangbanging out of California, you know, and to be able to write about it at that very pinnacle time, you know, it was a super important time because it was just now starting to happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like just now, like, look at gangbanging in Texas. Like, who does that?
I think there may have been just certain aspects that maybe New York lifestyle is different.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't get it. I mean.
Well, I hear Rick James here way more than I do in New York. Like, I heard Mary Jane three times this week. And that's never on the radio out there.
Yeah,
it's a tonal thing.
I don't know. It just depends on the time period. Like, if you're talking about now, yeah, no.
Okay.
But growing up, yeah, Rick James, all that was.
I mean, he's from New York. He's from Buffalo.
Yeah, Buffalo, New York. I grew up on that, and it was played constantly.
I'll tell you what else, too. As we're talking about gang culture has now swept New York.
Yeah, it has.
I would have never thought I'd see Bloods in New York. And they're there. Baltimore, one of my, you know, I come from Treetop High Rue, and they got Treetop High Rues in Baltimore. It's like, wow.
It's
my gang got distributed, not my records.
you need better representatives, maybe. I don't know. <I'm> just... But it's interesting. The whole landscape of New York City is different, and I question why that has happened. I think it says a lot about the power of the enterprise of drug dealing,
mm-hmm.
And it being equally as successful as a business like Google. but I mean, it definitely transforms lives, neighborhoods, communities, and all that. And then it's just devoid of political representation. So if anything, it's, you know, I mean, we know it's, you go to jail for it and you die from it. But in terms,
there's a draw.
Yeah.
There's still something that draws you in to wanting to be a part of a gang. And you know the risks. There's only two ways out, you know, but people still want to do it. It's almost like riding a roller coaster with no harness. It's the element of unbridled danger, you know.
That and the lack of opportunities or being shown anything that you think will turn into a tangible, real
source of employment, like
source of employment or lifestyle that, you know, it's comfortable, you'll be okay, and know, like, I can do this for the rest of my life, sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. And so, who knows? I don't know.
Yeah. It may change.
But
I remember, when I was a kid, my dad was in the Navy, grew up all over the place, but I lived in San Diego when I was a little kid in, like, 89, like, 91, 92 or something. And then we moved up outside Oakland. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I remember that gang stuff was, like, it was constant. It was like, okay, it's initiation. Like, you know, if somebody flashes their lights at you, don't, if somebody's lights are off, don't flash your lights at them. They're going to shoot you. And it was just, like, constant. I was in fourth grade, you know? It was like, it seemed like everybody was doing it.
Yeah, so that was like a code? Like, if somebody's got their lights off?
I'm sure it was some bogus news story that, like, filtered its way to me. But, yes, I remember that news story.
Wow. Well, I remember, I wouldn't have never been in a gang had we not been getting, like, threatened by the neighborhood, the other neighborhoods. They used to come over there and go hard on us for nothing. I grew up into it. It wasn't like I started any of it, but I was a victim of it just because of where I lived.
Right.
Regardless if I wanted to be in it or not, I was automatically put in it and made to pay a debt from somebody from my side. From maybe years ago.
Right.
You know, so I ultimately stopped being afraid. And, you know, I started getting guns, like, when I was young. Because dudes were shooting at us. So, you know, naturally, self-preservation is the first law of nature. I knew that. So I sold drugs and bought some guns and kept my guns around, you know. Every now and then we'd shoot them. Just so people know that we armed over here. Like, we let them lock. Out the backyard, it's like, ooh, that was close. That's what you hear when the neighbors say, ooh, that was pretty close.
Yeah. Like thunder.
Yeah, no, you have to give them a thunderclap every now and then and let them know I'm not having it no more. Y'all not going to be chasing me from the liquor store. Y'all not going to be shooting at me at the swap meet. Y'all not going to be trying to rob me from the record store. Like, I'm going to kill y'all niggas.
Do you still have to just let people know even at this stage?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
It's clear.
Now it's almost
understood.
Like... Yeah, it is what it is. There were things that happened that are under the table that are done and passed. Well, I got my bones, you know. I ain't got shit to prove when it comes to street stuff. I paid my dues, you know. And again, I wouldn't have never been in the gang if these dudes wouldn't have kept trying to bully me.
Right.
You know. And it wasn't Bloods or Crips, it was just me and these fools. You know what I mean? And I just so happened to be on the blood side of the neighborhood.
Were you making music with that sort of pressure at some point in time?
That took away from the pressure of that stuff. Staying in the house and making beats, beating on the old cars in front of the house that don't work no more on the hood, with your little homies from the neighborhood rapping, you know, and staying in front of the house so the sun went down and still be cool. That's what it was. And then go inside and, you know, play with this little TR-606 drum machine and try to make it sound like 808. You couldn't, because you couldn't extend the bass. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was tough just trying to get through the anxiety that came from living in Compton. Again, unless we had music. Music kind of saved me. It kept me off the streets. Put it to you like that.
Making music now without that pressure. How's that feel?
It's awesome. Yeah, I just have to be careful to not think that I need that kind of pressure to make music. Because at some point it became like the motivation. go to the studio and go hard, like with my Dollars and Cents records, you know, that was it. Now it's like, you know, come to the studio, cool. Like, if you're going to have people come to visit, don't bring 10 guys and they come in there and look hard, because that doesn't make music, you know what I mean? Like they used to, studio used to be full of guys, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Passing the joint.
Full of guys.
They got a pistol.
Big, the big bill at the end with the phone calls and
exactly.
The food that was
running
ordered.
Up your phone bill, calling people up there. No girls.
Yeah.
No, we call it the sausage party. No girls. These dudes used to come and just turn the studio out with guys. But, you know, now it's like that don't exist. You got really young, hungry engineers. You got people now that want to work to, you know, help the music situation. Like, they're kind of more driven now because nobody wants to see it die.
Yeah.
So these dudes is learning all kind of new tricks, you know, with editing and, you know, Pro Tools, making it do this and bringing in plugins to, you know, to make things sound new and different. There's a certain kind of hunger there that's going on, I noticed, in the just in the engineer phases of music where it is now.
I like it. Like, which studios are here?
There's Pacifique, North Hollywood. There's a little big room, you know, with this kid, Steve Sletten. Ken Tarandarian over at, is that a name for you? That's his last name.
He's right? Not even
Tarandarian. You know, just the they got the big K board, the big expensive $1 million SSL board, and they're trying to use it, you know, to make music great again.
Do you keep abreast on the changing technology, or do you?
Yeah. I still look for it. It's like buying a new PS4. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. When something new comes out, you just got to get it because you, even though you haven't tried it, you know it's going to blow your mind when you get it. So, you know, I was in a Guitar Center yesterday asking my boy Ryan Mason, what's new? What's good? He's like, oh, man, you already got everything. I sold you everything that's new. I'm like, all right, I've used it. Now what's new?
So that's why you were able to schedule this interview on Black Friday. You're like, I'm good.
Yeah, I ain't got a shop today. I got everything at home. Man.
Do you have, I'm pretty sure, people come up to you, and maybe I get it a lot, a lot of emails of people who just want to just sit in the room, you know. And
be a fly on the wall in my session.
Yeah, do you get, you know, or do you
it
give people that opportunity to learn?
Yeah, I still feel uncomfortable about it because everything that I did, we did in private, you know, like, yeah. You know, recording in a situation and using your chops, you know, my special little, this is my special ingredient.
Yeah.
I don't want you to know what makes my sweet potato pie taste so good. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, get your mamas, you know? But this was, you know, just some of the equipment we used that wasn't just the console. We'd have, like, Neve sidecars, and we'd sidechain them through a, you know, 1176 and then a Demeter Pre, and, like, we'd get three different sounds on one mic, or the bass, the way the bass would go through, like, a Lange EQ, you know, and we was trying to get all this second harmonic distortion and this discrete Class A sound and mix it with the digital and make it bright but still clean. It was like it was work. You know, it's mad science stuff. It's like, you know, this is big, expensive equipment, and we need to make our records sound like big and expensive. Is really what it was.
I feel like you just right now, when you just kind of briefly touched on those little bits, you just gave a little small class if anyone was paying attention.
Mix it all up and ride it to the end. It's all about how you do signal flow, and you can go from point A to point B, and that'll be simple. It'll flip the switch, it'll work. Or you can go from point A through a whole lot of other alphabets and letters and then come back to point B with Z and W sewn in, and then you have this other sound. It's the ultimate alphabet soup, musically.
Well, and speaking of, like, mentors who cannot get into the CEO of special recipe book. Can you talk about working with your son?
Oh, man, easy. Dave is just like it's like my clone. He, you know, I told him, I watched him, because he played basketball in high school. And I asked him what he wanted to do, like, do you want to pursue it? He was like, it's unrealistic because everybody wants to ball, and I'm just okay. I'm like, you're actually pretty good. He was like, no, I'm going to try to do music. I'm like, well, you know, it's not that easy to do music either.
you know, you kind of have to be special about it. And he was like, you know, I am. So I would hear him work on just on his little, his computer, his iMac. And it sounded decent when I started hearing it. I was like, okay, because first I wouldn't give it an ear. I was like, you know, get up to where I'll take you serious. You know, at least get close to somewhere where you got some boom clap going and it's hot. And my daughter would come and tell me, she's like, Daddy, have you heard David's new song? It sounds good. I'm like, I'll listen to it or whatever. So one day I listened and I heard it. And I was like, and I heard it. I heard the magic. Mm. So I told him, I said, well, look, if you really want to pursue this, then I'm going to take you and I'm going to buy you a real system. Like, but you're going to be on this platform. It's like, you got to ride it. He was with it. Bought him a whole Pro Tool system, got him got him a good interface, got him a couple of keep, got him a Jupiter 80, and you know, and he was pulling in WAV files, like, you know, going online. He was, you know, and making these songs. He just started making these hot beats, and I'm like, wow, get down, sound like you're using it. And I told him, I said, you know, you're probably gonna be better than me. You're learning faster than I did, and you got more. You know, more things at your disposal. So you might go further than me. Like, mm-hmm. You're going to be better than me. I was when I was 19. And he is. It happened. I mean, he's been working on Pro Tools since he was 15. Now he knows he engineers for me. Like, when I want to put together a playlist for a show, it's not just, like, get your turn, you know, get the old two-track that we always been mm-hmm. using. We could remix right before the show. Like, we'll take Pro Tools now to the venue mm. and have it in the dressing room, and we'll reprogram the songs, do stems, change, edit, and it makes it that much more special. But it's also showing him how he can have an advantage by being an engineer and being an artist. And he's pretty learned. He's pretty dope. He's got good ears, just like his dad.
It's dope.
I want to ask about the word funk, funky, mm-hmm. way too funky. What does that mean to you? Why does it matter?
Why does funky matter?
Yeah.
Well, if you know how funk really works, I'm not just trying to be funny, but you got to get funky to make records that give people the frown face when they hear it, like, ugh.
Yeah.
But you actually literally got to be a stinky maggot in the studio, like 5 days, no bath.
Okay.
You know, George Clinton style. That's what George Nam used to do. George Nam didn't bathe. So I started doing that. Like Nate Dogg, it's been 7 days, the same clothes. I was literally in there like, whew, but I ain't taking no break. get that wordlets around here. Let's get funky. You know, it's a different attitude when you go in the studio all fastidious and clean. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get down. Like, hey, look at my watch. You know, my shoes are white. I'm not going to party. You know what I mean? I ain't finna write no song. I'm finna take some pictures of me. You know, that's them days. But we was in there getting stinky. And it gets on. It got on the music. Like, I'm not as much of a funk guy as I used to be, because mm-hmm. it seems like outside of the one new hot record that I like, the Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars and Mark mm-hmm. Ronson, outside of that, it's like funk is, it's a novelty now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Right. It's like an accessory. Yeah.
Right now, it's about the super accessible 808 driven hook mustard beats.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. If you want to be heard on the radio, you got to have a mustard beat.
But what are you into?
I'm into mustard beats. I like that stuff. You know, I like anything that tries to keep it where you please everyone. Like, you got kids and adults liking it at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, a hit record is a hit record no matter who makes it. And to me, there are some hot records out there. Unfortunately, records don't go platinum like they used to, you know, no matter what you do. But there's still some hot records out there that if this were a different day, these records would be big.
Yeah.
Multi-platinum. You know, I like Jasmine Sullivan.
Me too. You know,
I still like Mint Condition. They're still putting out Effector Joe. Still putting out these awesome records. You know, you don't hear them. They get a little radio spin here and there, but you know they're out because
These guys are still touring. I like Jhené Aiko, you know, soulful girl. No disrespect to Taylor Swift. I get it. I know why it's popular. But, you know, I'd be a weirdo if I, like, bought the Taylor Swift album and was in the car rolling down, shake, shake, shake. You know, I can't, you know, some things I got to stay away from, you know. But I like the new producers, Migos, little hip-hop producers. These dudes is funky, you know. I like Rich Homie Quan. I think he has something to offer. And I also like the kid that sings, what's the song? The most catchy record that came out this year. Where you can't understand, you can't really understand the lyrics.
Not Young Thug.
Yeah, Young Thug. That's what, I don't know why his name evaded me, you know. But I like all listening to his mixtapes and just seeing him just be silly like that. Like that's kind of dope. Like Caution to the Wind, he don't care. Mm-hmm. That's what's gonna make him rich. You know, and he writes these hooks he's writing are incredible. So, you know, there's still a lot of a light out there, like T-Fly. You know, this is a singing little talented dude, but he's not just doing ratchet music. Everybody thinks he's only capable of doing ratchet. He can also do pop. You know what I mean? So, you know, shout out to T-Fly, man. And, you know, and then the underground dudes that's still blowing up. Like, I like Scheme from Inglewood. You know, these are people that have yet to be all over the place, but they are effective right now, and they're starting to blow. Again, I got to mention Problem. I got to mention YG. And even this new kid, RJ. Like, I got to see what RJ is about. That's one of YG's new artists. So, you know, I got to put my ear to that. But I'm watching, you know, I see everything that's... I'm still a DJ. I still have to play this stuff in the club. You know. I like Ed Sheeran. You know, the Sing record, I broke that at a BET party, you know, for the BET Awards earlier this year. You know, I know it works. Certain records still work, you know.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the new album a little bit?
Yeah.
So, That Nigga's Crazy to me. I had to say
like that title.
With a straight face.
That nigga's crazy.
Did you read that one or did you just say it?
No, I just said it because, you know, like, I had to get it out. You know, aside from, like, Tribe Suck a Nigga, I try not to say it, but, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that song to me sounds like Busta Rhymes, Get You Some. Did you do that record?
You mean the record he did on Dr. Dre?
The record that he did with Dr. Dre. Uh-huh.
See, what had happened was...
This is why we need cameras.
You're a bad boy. It's based on the same...
Yeah.
The same snare, the same clash that actually came from the Moog. That clap sound is from the Moog. But it feels kind of the same, don't it?
It does.
That was a big record to me.
Me too. You know? I mean, it didn't really... I don't know.
That didn't whole catch album on. That album was smart.
Yeah, very.
That album was smart. You know, that Stevie Wonder record on there was hot.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of stuff. You know, I think everybody wanted Bus to just stay, you know, in the Cavassier and If You Really Want to Party With Me and, you know, they wanted him to stay in that. This is serious. They wanted him to stay there. And this album kind of, like, stretched him out a little bit. He was stretching.
Yeah, I just heard that. And I was like, ooh. You know, I mean... And then
I worked with Dre.
I know.
I mean, I borrowed some things. He borrowed some things.
That happens.
You know, it's natural.
It is natural. It was just so, maybe this is, I don't know, you know, it's hard. Maybe you can identify with this as a DJ, producer, musician. You may listen to things a little bit more and then versus like not being a producer and you just listen to it and you don't hear all these things that, like, so many different things, elements stand out to music to me, and sometimes I wish I could turn it off. But I heard that, and I was like, oh. And then you just was spitting crazy on there.
Yeah, well.
And I was like, who got on the wrong side of DJ Quick
get up on the wrong side of the bed.
Crazy, 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 crazy. was running down to the nuts. You don't need no Viagra or stins, cause when a dick's good, they put their cushion on your front and they swing it from left and right until it ends. But then they all catch feelings and the psycho shows, and that's when they become them passive aggressive hoes talking about flipping me. What she do with her toys? You can't put nothing in me, bitch. I'm a boy. And if you keep annoying me, I'ma pump your pussy full of lead and poison both your ovaries. I'm fly, too fly. I wish it made sense to say three fly. You can't because we hot. Stir up from the barrel, so that means that I'm clean. And I'm so cool, I can nut ice cream. Now how you want it, when you want it, come get up on it. If you get it, you gon' get it. You know how I get when I hit it, I split it.
No, it was to me. That was just an ode to Richard Pryor, because Richard Pryor, when he decided to stop caring, that's when he blew up. When he was just trying to make people laugh and find his own niche, and he was getting fired from his gig, getting kicked out of Vegas, out of the Atlantic or whatever. When he gave up everything and just when he said fuck it, that's when he became a multi. So that was pretty much just outlandish, crazy lyrics with DeBar singing, just whatever. Like, you know what I mean? But going hard at the same time. Like, because, people still, people are crazy. People talk crazy. They ask dumb questions, especially to me, a celebrity. Like, you don't want to talk to me like that. Because I'm not always Mr. Nice Guy. And I will fuck you up sometimes. I'll beat your ass. Because you can't ask me certain things. And, I met some weird people who said some weird things. And I just decided to rap about the weird things that I hear. What girls want to try. They got a fantasy to do this and that. It's like, bitch, do that to yourself. You know what I mean? Like, use your own orifice for that. What you want to do, some shit like that? I'm not even into that. Like, what's your point? How, what do you really need to do to get to a fucking orgasm? Like, what's wrong? I'm not going for that. You're crazy. Jack off, bitch. I'm leaving. But, it's whatever, man. It was weird. And, Richard Pryor's comedy was all hypersexual. Mm. You know what I mean? Very blatant. So I figured I could do that in 2014. Just be blatant and nasty and a record you'll never hear on the radio. So I said the F word as much as I could.
I was like, wow, that's a hell of a way to start an album.
Like just all over the top. And it's mixed. If you listen to it, it's a cacophony because it's a banjo. First of all, my mental is in question when you listen to the two guys on the beginning of the album debating how to approach me and what to talk about and, get some information from me so they can push hip-hop forward because supposedly I'm a giver. I tell all the secrets. And they come in, and I'm talking about what we got to pedal now is something different. Let's pedal a banjo. Like, let's make a banjo the new hot instrument. And they was like, oh, dude, it's over. That's it. This is Quick talking about a banjo. And then when the record comes on, it's a funky banjo, like, off the top. But again, it's a cacophony because the music that's on there is, like, everything's loud. Mm. The singing's loud, the rapping is loud, the snare is loud, the kick is loud. It's just, it's full, just a full, loud, crazy, that nigga's crazy record. In other words, I don't care what people think about me. I know who I am when I lay down on the pillow. I know who I am when I get up. So people can keep their opinions to themselves, and that's what it is.
Puffin' the Dragon.
It's a hot-ass record.
It is. It sounds like superheroes theme song.
Something very special about that music, and I'm proud of it. As a matter of fact, you guys are going to be hearing that music without the lyrics in a lot of places. It's a sad record, though, because, I'm rapping about how the graveyard is filling up with my friends. Like, I go to certain graveyards now, and it's more than one person I got to visit. Now, that's a testament to growing older. So, that reminds me, hey, a lot of time has passed. You know what I mean? So I like to make every move that I do now has got to be effective. It's got to be something important. I don't have time to waste.
So when you say in the song, I'm not that passionate, or I'm not passionate about that.
Oh, not passionate as I was?
Yeah. What were you referring to?
About everything. You know, because I used to have this hunger, this drive to do everything, you know, and how important it was. But I started seeing that people don't take it as important as I do it. Maybe I'm just hypertrophying, and I need to relax. And if it's dying, let it die.
Who doesn't? You know? Your competition or your audience? Or
no, I'm just saying.
Your peers.
Just period. I mean, I'm watching, you know, when I say passion, what I'm talking about is my love for the way I produce, my love for just the amount of work that I put into it. I just don't, it's not that important to me anymore. I used to live to just do music. I live to do it because I figured, you know, this is who I am. This defines me. But it doesn't. I do other things too. Sometimes I turn the equipment off for a week and just leave. Like, you know, if there's a hit record that's coming, it's going to come regardless.
So does that make you enjoying life, I think, from a different perspective?
From a different perspective. Because back in the day, we were on the clock. I was living a 24-hour-a-day life, thinking about the length of my contract, my recording contract. Because it's like, I got to make all the money I can. That's what you used to hear all the time. Make all the money you can and save it. You know, so I was scared, making all the money I could, like producing there in the studio, sleep, waking up, and you remember,
yeah,
spend a night in the studio,
yeah,
and that was the passion. I was driven to do that. And it's like now, man, fuck this studio, man. Turn this shit off. This shit'll be if we go get some rest and some chicken pot pie, some stew, and some crab legs. You know what I'm saying? We eat good. Then we can come back tomorrow. We'll be hot. You know, and it's just different. I'm not in love with it like I used to be. And I hate to say that, but that's just kind of what it is. Not passionate about it, but I'll hit now and then. Like, I'll hit. I'll still make a hot record, or I'll still do a really inspired show, you know, or performance. But there's something, I don't know, when Tupac and Biggie died, something in me died too.
Wow.
I don't know what it is, but it's dead.
I mean, that was a long time ago. And you kept
still,
going.
there's still this feeling that I have that I don't have anymore. Like, there's a drive that I used to have that it's not there anymore. It's natural. It just happens. I guess I woke up one day like, this is not my life anymore. I just compartmentalize it. It's like, this is a job.
Right.
And this is my life. Mm. You know?
Never have another opportunity since you. Salon shop talk nowadays is jaded. They ask 1,000 questions while I'm getting my hair braided. Staring at me funny, counting $1 bills. Greed is a sin, but ignorance kills. And LA can be a very cold place at times. A lot of different drugs, no universal mind. On the same page, but a lot of different books. I swear that this could be as fun as it looks. Cause when you ride them right, you get the fun in the sun. But if you stab the horse, you're infamous. Got one and you're done. On the surface, it's calm. The naked eye cannot see it. But the undercurrents there, there's still a body if needed. So be
it. And I'm at it. I guess I'm just a musical addict. I like it when my life's automatic. I'm summoning magic. I gotta avoid it when it's tragic. So call me when you need a new gadget. I'm puffing the dragon. It's fried chicken back in the wagon. Mercedes, Lamborghini, we dragging.
On the interstate, 15 to Vegas. We drunk and we niggas. They pay us. players. Hills filling up with all of my friends. Emotions I can't show them, I'm just keeping it in. Got a lot of living to do, avoiding the laws of the land. The Grim Reaper got the scythe in his hand. So it's party on the stage while playing everything. Scratch the record, throw my hands up, make everybody sing. Still a one-man band, still a hip-hop fan. A producer from on Spruce, but with a mic and a band. I'm not as passionate about it, but I hit now and then. Not naive to the envy that fills the hearts of men. I'm a G from the streets, but I need a new letter. One that announces my power and describes me better. I'm a Q from the composition writer. I see it all in highlighter from the perspective of a biter. So Drake, I owe you a line, and Diddy, you too. Canada, New York, get Compton, let's get a brew, bruh.
Up and I'm at it, I guess I'm just a musical addict. I like it when my life's automatic. I'm summoning magic.
Besides, you know, I do a lot of, it's a lot of introspect going on. Like, I'm the same age right now as Marvin Gaye was when he died. So I think about stuff like that. I put it, it's chronological to me. And I'm like, hey, like, you know, what could Marvin Gaye have done to still be here? Who could have helped? You know, I don't mean to get all deep with it, but you know what
no,
I'm saying.
No, I do.
Well, I mean,
I
think about
it.
His dad. I mean, that's like,
you know.
I get that. I think, you know, that's a really...
You guys are the same age.
You 44? That's real, because when you're 18 or even 15, you don't think you're going to make it to see 18, 19.
Right.
You know, so your life is just encompassed in that, but then you do have these measures like, oh, Jesus was 33 when he, you know, so.
You got these markers.
These markers. That's interesting considering... I don't think your lifestyle is like with Marvin Gaye, you know. But.
Yeah, man, I'm afraid of cocaine. I'm afraid of it. I've seen what it did to my neighborhood in the 80s, and that's scary. And some of my family, like, you know, to see people just become bass heads. It was like, oh, this is crazy. This is people that were 2 weeks ago had a job, now they're wearing the same clothes. Like, they're insane, and they don't know it.
Yeah.
So that's not my thing.
It's just interesting, this hearing this album.
There's some good stuff on this record.
There's a lot of good stuff on this record.
Really good record.
And it sounds like the headspace that you're in sounds, I'll say the word comfortable.
Yeah. It is, Ali. It is. It's because I did an album without distraction. In the past, my last few albums, every time I tried to go in the studio to do it, there was distraction. I would get messages from people telling me, you know, fuck you, you don't need to be going to the studio, nigga. If you go to the studio, we're going to do this. Or, you know, these people hating on you, they don't want to see the... It's like, what does that have to do with music? And why are you trying to get me that message? Don't y'all know I'll come over there and blow y'all motherfucking house up? It's like, that what y'all want from me? Y'all want me to stop doing music? You know, so y'all sending me all these death threats and all this weird shit. It was just distraction. With this album, didn't nobody even know I was doing a record, except the musicians. This record was all about... musicians. Wasn't no street bullshit going on. Wasn't no, my sister's mad at me, so she finna threaten me, and, you know, she's gonna do this and do that. None of that. It was like we got in the studio and we thought about what music was missing. We listened to all the good new records, and we listened to a few old classic records, and we just started writing from another place, not stealing this, not borrowing from that, just doing music for right now. Like, what kind of record are we supposed to make right now? This seems like this would be good for right now, because there's holes, there's lanes for this kind of music.
What are the few classic records?
Excuse me?
What were the few classic records that you listened to?
On, oh, the old school stuff?
Yeah.
Shuggie Otis. The Dames, Games, and Guitar Things album by Eddie Hazel. And... Ohio Players' second album, Ecstasy.
Yeah.
You know.
Speaking of Ohio Players, Pet Sematary.
Yeah, man. Easy call, right?
I mean, but did you have to? Nothing. I mean, it's a few songs you have like that. I think there's a Parliament song too. That I'm wondering, like, how do you
get away with it?
There's no one knocking on the door saying,
because you know how it works. You change the right amount of notes. You can have a record that feels like someone's record, and then you can have a record that plagiarizes their record. Yeah. All the notes were strategically changed, but still kept at the same tempo, and that's how it is. It's still a five. It's a 5/4 loop, you know. Five bar turnaround, but which is identically what they did mm-hmm. as far as arrangement goes. It's just the notes are different.
I might have to take a DJ quick class if
come on, man, you can trust yeah. me. Like to me, you know, Puffin' the Dragon is based on classic 70s, 80s folk pop records. You know, if you listen to it, it's the same key structure because you know, you can't trademark everything you play on a piano. Right. It's like it's just impossible. You know, by the time you play four bars of music, you're going to repeat what somebody else has done. So if that was the case, no albums would be coming out True. Because as soon as you put your fingers on the chord, now I know what that is, you can't use it. You know, then you got the, what we call the sample trolls who are out there mm-hmm. that really just, that's all they live for is to come stop you, knock on your door, and get your publishing to go into their bank account. Bridgeport. Assholes.
Yeah, I was expecting a few publishing checks in the past. I want to say even like 7 fiscal cycles that just like, nope.
Huh, still held up.
Just like, nope, you're not gonna, because we got to clear this up. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I need that right now.
That'll work.
But that definitely motivated it was the motivation to learn music, to learn how to play instruments. Absolutely. Can you explain to our listeners?
I did that too.
What is a working class G? Because you mentioned that.
Oh, like the you know it's just middle. It's the homeboys that have left the gang, you know, and the young mentality, and they got 9-to-5s, but they still go to the liquor store on break, like at noon, and get their cigarettes. Or get they blunts or whatever. But they working class now. But you could tell like they was a whippersnapper back in their day. You know, that's what I see when I go to the hoods now. It's still the young cats that go in there and get their Hennessy, or they go in there and get their blunt wraps or whatever. Or they get some Ciroc and they be on their swag. But then it's the dudes that, you know, that just grew up, but they still hit the liquor store. That's where all the working class G's go, certain stores. You know, certain liquor marts, you know, we still turn. I'm a working class G in that term because I'm in there at work time. You know, we call it beer 30 when the job is over. You know, we go in there and get something to sip on, have, you know.
Right.
Just a habit.
Shoot. I like when you say much safer on skates on thin ice with lead plates.
Woo. Like weigh yourself down on thin ice. And you're much safer doing that. Yeah, it's just wordplay, I guess.
Yeah.
You heard that? You picked up on that?
Yeah. It's a couple more. I'm a bad motherfucker because my Glock says so, but my wallet says Gucci. Fly killer, yo.
You remember the, you know, Jules?
Yeah, Jules. Yeah.
Gucci! Look, I'm about it. Like, it's legitimate.
He actually pulled it out, listeners.
I should get a bad motherfucker Gucci wallet.
Yeah.
Then I'm official.
Who is the singer on Life Jacket?
This is a young hood girl named Keisha Smith. Now, how hood is that name?
It's real hood.
Keisha Smith. Keisha Smith sang that song for me in a North Hollywood studio. I met her through my homeboy, Sean. He's like, man, check her out. And I was like, okay. So I gave her a screen test, put her on the mic. She said, sang a little something. I was like, I heard her vocal tone. And I was like, she might sound good singing this. So I wrote that hook, you know, and sang it as a demo for her and just had her follow it. And she was killing me because she couldn't hit the runs. Like, she couldn't hit those notes. It's like, you're a singer, though. You should be able to find these notes. She couldn't find them, so it was like pulling teeth to get it to sound like that. But, you know, ultimately, we got it done. And no disrespect to her. She called my lawyers and stuff about spelling her name right on the credits when it's time for the video. She wanted me in the video.
What was the smell Smith? Like S-M-I?
You know, there are a lot of different ways to spell Keisha.
Well, true, Keisha. True. You know. I wasn't even thinking that. Nah, she sounds good, though.
Keisha, she cool, man. She a little Tom girl. She go out and play basketball, play a game of pickup basketball and flip-flop. So she look like Jesus running around with Hebrew feet, making swishes, like barefoot. Like, just one of them, just a real hood girl.
So easy. jacket.
Toss me.
Jacket.
Hey, it's so sweet how I emerge, making richy, glitchy, bougie people come party with us, kicking and spurring. So I'ma
set you free
and keep me a life jacket on. Take the bitter with the sweet and keep my hookers in the street and keep
set you free.
Oh yeah, I'm on my way up to glory with this one this time, damn it, because I heard it's more there.
Set you free.
This can only be done by us. No begging, pardon for us, from me. Turn it up one good time and get the money.
Set you free.
Oh my God, I'm quick like
aha. You love California for the gold, right?
No, the bronze.
Set you free.
Mr. Shit, I told you not to do today applies for every day, home, get it straight.
Should you
shit, did you fuck me?
What?
You mean you stayed home, bitch, because your dog had puppies?
Should you
free? Y'all get off hope, go check that Long Beach out near Sunset and come back home and get my neck wet.
Woe is me, can't get my bread up when it's so easy. I can't keep my head above the stormy seas. All I need, someone to look out for me.
Toss me a life jacket.
Toss me.
She should definitely be in the video.
Who, Keisha?
Yeah.
We can. Oh, all right, we need to find. I think she moved to Texas or something. I can find her though. But yeah, I appreciate that, man. Because she sounds to me different than everything else that's out there. You know, not a super perfect singer, but not crappy either.
Yeah.
You know, good in between. That's a good video too. We did good numbers with that video at MTV.
Dope. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, we're on a yacht. We took a $20 million yacht out in Newport. And wild out. Fun.
The Getter. So you're on a song with David, your son, right? David Blake. Do you say this? I don't remember. Or does David say school is free? No,
I say
think
that.
You say that. School is free.
Life after that is
life
not.
Life after that is not.
Asphalt pavement is cold. Tension in jail is hot. In other words, stay off the streets.
Do you think kids take the education for granted?
Yeah, I did. I dropped out of school thinking, whatever. And then when I was after age, I was like, oh, that was pretty dumb. You know what I mean? It was free. Now I gotta pay to go to a continuation. I gotta get a car. Now it's more. Life is expensive now. I think they take for granted that, you know, that system. You know, get in there and milk it. It's like, don't ask the cow where the milk came from. Just drink it up and ask for more. If that's what it's really about, get that free education. It's gonna help you in the future. Mm. You know, and just the rate at which African Americans are dropping out of school is just crazy. You know, it makes me sad because I was one of them kids. You know, I needed somebody to help steer me in the right direction. Nobody was there.
8:37 p.m.
Yeah, smelling good in
Pacific
here.
Pacific Standard Time.
Look at this, y'all. Look, drinking.
This was happening.
Go.
Number two is for pencils, so I'ma do instrumentals. I write in my head, I still see too much potential. I'm throwing them parties, the ones you remember. In 1999, from June to November, I'm walking around in my sandals, but I'm getting shit handled. With or without the scandal, yeah, I'm getting shit handled. I'm too old, no such. Too funky, pretty much, that's what's up. Partying in L.A., niggas showing me love. They brought me 12 drinks and I threw up in the club. Are y'all gonna kill me? Am I gonna kill myself? I go too fucking hard, I need to watch my health. See, I need to brush my teeth and shit. Lay off this leaf and shit. Before I get a DUI, see you high? Yeah, I'm high. Finicky people wanna hold me as hostage. I do a bow face and walk right into my couches. Gold around my neck, ain't nothing on my toes. A bunch of white powder, ain't nothing up my nose. I'm a geek, I suppose. I'm a freak, I suppose. I'm whatever you want me to be this week, I suppose. Yeah, it's getting kinda hectic. It's getting kinda turning, all these hoes getting naked.
Yeah, I just had a serious conversation with my nephew who wanted to do the same thing. He's like, I want to pursue music and just got a job at UPS. I was like, oh my God.
The bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, okay, picture you without a degree later on down the line. And you really want to do something major, but now they tell you no because you don't have a degree or whatever. And I'm like, you're at the back of the line of 100 million and before you is another 350 million. Where do you want to stand?
Exactly.
So I like the line in that song. Sean, you say feng shui, nigga. What the heck is that?
Feng shui?
Yeah. I know what feng shui is, but I mean, oh, we really gotta go. Oh, I'm on NPR time. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just rhyming with rum straight.
Okay.
Feng shui is how fluid, you know, it's the Chinese and Japanese code. What is it, Chinese or Japanese?
I think it's Chinese.
It's Chinese fluid. It's a thing about flowing, how everything's supposed to flow. Mm-hmm. Nothing's supposed to interact with each other, you know, everything's fluidness and it's mellow. So I'm like, that's how I feel. I'm a feng shui. Like, I'm a mellow dude. I flow. But you get me in the club, I'm going to be on rum straight. I might not flow, but I'm going to be drunk. You know what I mean? Just wordplay, man. Just having fun with, you know.
No, we like legit have to.
No, this is the last one. This is the last question. I know. This is a good one. Sacrifices. Often when artists pursue their dreams, they do so at great sacrifices. Mm-hmm. What have you sacrificed?
To get to where I'm at?
Yeah.
I lost some really awesome friendships, you know. I probably missed my, you know, a wife along the lines because I was too busy working. Being a workaholic, I've lost a lot of things monetarily too. Like, sometimes you can work to your demerit, you know what I mean? You can work to your detriment, rather, because I wasn't coming up for air. So, you know, I lost a bunch of material things. Like, I had a car stolen from me by this dude, George Archer, G1, took my Acura NSX, wrecked it, and then just kind of, I was like, you bought it if you wrecked it, you know? And had I been not working so hard, I would have kept my car. We just had him repair it the right way instead of going to the bootleg Johnny that fixed Fiats and, you know, have him try to, you know, bondo my Acura NSX. So I missed that. Mm-hmm. So I lost some material things, you know, great sacrifice, you know, again, some friendships and some people that passed away. Like, I buried a lot of my friends. I buried my security guard, Bundy, in 94. And it was like, you know, this is a guy that I spent every day with for like 3 years. Now I got to fly him home to St. Louis for a funeral. Like, this is just, it's crazy. You know, I lost some serious people.
You looking forward to the next 24 years?
Yeah, I am. This is what I'm looking forward to, though, is being able to use my expertise, engineer-wise, with a lot of these really talented young artists who still have the potential to change music. Mm. You know, the right portals, the right avenues, the right labels behind them, you know, the right marketing, everything in place, you know, and to push forward this great sound of music, or albeit this trendy or, you know, or even abstract, whatever it is that I do, it tends to work. I mean, I've sold 3.5 million records as DJ Quick, but I sold 97.5 million records producing everybody else. And that's my 100 million.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come kick it with us.
Oh, come on, Ali, you my guy, man.
I want to interview
you next time, because I got some things to ask y'all about low-end theory.
Come back. I'm a little tight lip on certain things. But
he thinks he is. You can play him, though.
Oh, you could. Oh. Now I know to be watched, keep my eye out for Franny. But, no, you know, DJ Molly Mall is one of my favorite producers.
Right on.
DJ Premier, one of my favorite producers.
Easily.
DJ Quick, you're one of my favorite producers.
Thanks, Ollie.
And I've written that before, so.
Respect. You know, I think I saw that in print, and I was blown away because I didn't think nobody in New York liked me.
Nah, you kidding me? Q-Tip and I, we, like, NWA, Quick, Easy.
Thank you, bro.
We was driving, young, 19, 20, just blasting the music through Brooklyn, Queens. So, you know, thank you.
One more thing before we go.
Yeah.
I always wanted to work with you. When I saw you stretch out and do Lucy Pearl, I was like, this is awesome.
This is ridiculous. We need to make this like a five-parter.
And I don't know if you know, but I mixed that Get Involved song for Raphael and Q-Tip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was my first time working on that console, too, Jay, but I nailed it. Didn't even know it.
I'm in LA now, so.
Let's build, bro. If you're going over to on Blakesley, I'm coming over there to visit you guys. I'm bringing my drum machine, all my sounds, my old keyboards, my new keyboards. I'm gonna find my passion. When I get in there with y'all, I might get passionate again.
Let's do it. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.